All right, we'll go ahead and start to make sure that we have enough time at the end for Q&A. Welcome to our session. We titled it Art Meets Function, and it's basically what we're going to talk about is a case study of how we built the new website for the Seattle Art Museum, that it's SharePoint 2013. And although we're talking about an external-facing site, a lot of the concepts that we're going to talk about are around user experience. And our concepts that really are applicable, whether you're talking about an external-facing site or your own site collection that's just internal, you're talking about extranets, they're really applicable to all of them. So we'll cover a wide range of topics from responsive design and how to achieve that in SharePoint and how we made it do that. We'll also talk about decentralizing updates to the site and using SharePoint as a content management system. And then, what did we do to leverage out-of-the-box SharePoint as much as we could? What were some of those features that SharePoint 2013 let us utilize to avoid customizing, and where we just couldn't and had to customize, and why? So we'll try to cover a little bit of all of those things. If you have questions, please be sure to ask them at the end of the Q&A. We'd love to talk more about the project. We could probably do this a three-hour session. Now, first of all, let me introduce everyone that's up here. As you can see, there's three of us. Because it is a case study where we want to show you all the different perspectives of everyone involved in the project. In this project, we have three different teams, basically, and our three different companies that participated on the project. So we have Kevin Schreier from the Seattle Art Museum, who we call AKA the client. We have Nick Thiel from Hornell Anderson, which was the design firm that actually created the user experience and the design for the website. And I'm Roberto Iglesias from BuildingEye, and we were the SharePoint consultants in charge of implementing the site and putting this together. So to get started, I'll let Kevin tell you a little bit about the project, the background, and how we got started.
Thank you. So, before we dive into that website, I'll talk about the brand and why it's really important to have an understanding of that, and you'll see how it strongly influenced the new site. So what you see on the screen right now is a new logo for us. At the Seattle Art Museum, we connect art to life. And so in this logo, the A, or rather really the absence of the A, serves as a window to that, for that connection to art. SAM strategically is a portal to art. That's what that represents there. We did a lot of brand work before we dove into the site because Kim Rorschach, our COO and director, started on the same day that I did about a year ago. So more than ever, it was important that everybody was on the same page with regard to our aesthetic, our look and feel, our tone of voice, and everything that the brand stood for, and not just graphically or for marketing, but even how it would influence exhibition decisions and curatorial decisions. So A to Z, being on the same page for the brand was really important before we dove into this work. And this Seattle Art Museum is a somewhat complicated brand in that it's not just one museum, it's three museums, and we have three locations, and they're very distinctly different. But we knew that after a couple months of brand work, that SAM as a brand is definitely stronger as one brand, not three brands, and we want one website, not three websites. And you'll see how all that comes together. So this building is the original museum. It was founded in 1906 by Dr. Richard Fuller. It is now our Asian art museum. It's the home of all of our Korean, Chinese, Japanese, and Indian art. And this is our downtown location. In 1933, it moved from that Deco building in Volunteer Park to another Deco building downtown. And then again in 1991, the museum expanded into this big, modern glass and steel building where we have over 25,000 pieces in our collection. Not all on display, but housed there. And this is also still connected to that Deco building that was downtown. And then we also have this third location, which is the Olympic Sculpture Park. This opened in January of 2007. It's 9 acres, and at the time it was a really massive cleanup because this was a big industrial wasteland before it became the sculpture park. And this has become really quite the location for the city as well because it's free, it's extremely popular just as a park, and it's beautiful. And you can see it's right on the water, so we also get a lot of tourism at this location because of the cruise ships come into town, and that's a really popular destination for that. But through the branding process and in the brand work that we did, it became really apparent, especially at this location when we were doing site visits and working with people on Nick's team and then everybody sharing stories of friends and family or coworkers, that a lot of people, even local people in Seattle, didn't realize this was the Seattle Art Museum. They thought it was a city park. So it was just another exposure of how the SAM brand had its weak spots. So what the problem is, we have these, what you just saw, three beautiful locations filled with beautiful art, and they all had one common big problem, and that was we had a hideous website. It really was just awful. I'm allowed to say that. Roberto allowed me. But really, the site didn't live up to the brand, especially after we did the brand work, we realized it more than ever. So up in the left-hand corner, you can see the old logo. So you can see how that evolved to a much stronger brand that I opened up with, much stronger presence. And you can look at this homepage and say, well, that's not quite hideous. But this was a Band-Aid that was created 5 years ago, which is a very long Band-Aid. And then when you get into it, it just gets worse and worse and worse. So that was the website. So you can see that's not our brand. That's not us. And I love comparing websites to houses and remodeling. And this was a house that had been added onto and added onto and added onto for the last 12 years. And every time it was a different architect and designer. And so it was really hard to navigate. It was really had inconsistent naming and nomenclature, and you know, we tried to be all things to all people and say everything we could possibly say, and it just, you know the story. It just got worse and worse and worse from there. So that led to one big question. How do we create a website worthy of the SAM brand? And that's the question we proposed to Nick and Hornell Anderson.
Thanks, Kevin. So, yeah, hideous. more frustrating than the actual look of the experience was just it sprawled. It went everywhere. It was confusing to navigate. You couldn't really find the information you were looking for. And so one of the first things we wanted to figure out is how can we organize this in a thoughtful way? We knew that the design at some point was going to have to take over, but we needed to figure out how we could organize it. And really we turned to the brand architecture for this inspiration. And so, as Kevin was mentioning earlier, we folded the three locations under one umbrella for SAM. So there's SAM, or Seattle Art Museum, and then there's the three locations, the downtown location, the Asian Art Museum, and the Olympic Sculpture Park. But we wanted to make sure when users came to the site that they came in understanding that there is this one global brand and all these three locations laddered up to that. So you might ask what this has to do with organizing a website. Well, it's really important that the brand experience reflects the museum experience, and of course that museum experience must be reflected in the site experience. So what this led to was actually organizing the website in the same way as we organized the brand, as in you come in through one universal location, one universal homepage, and then we send you along your way once you figure out what you're looking for, what kind of art, what kind of event you're looking for, what kind of educational program you're looking for. We get you down that path, and then we'll point you to specifically what location you need to be at. But once we solved that problem, we were looking at the site and looked at each other and said, you know, something's not right here about the current site. Something's missing. What is that? And images. And images. And images. Images. I mean, it's art. It's visual. It needs to be visually enticing, visually exciting. It's a museum that you go and you look at things. And the previous site was woefully lacking in images. And so we needed to make sure that whatever solution we created accommodated that and showed as much visual expression of the brand as well as the collections they had on the website. And what was interesting about that was that there are all sorts of artist constraints that they place on showing images. So you can't crop them in any way or alter them in any way. All you can do is scale them to be the same proportion, but you can't really do anything. And of course, as designers, we're looking at each other trying to figure out, oh, how can we make a beautiful website if we can't change the images in any way? But we figured it out. And this is what the new site is looking like. These are Photoshop comps. So FYI, you will see the real site in a moment. But you can see, even from the homepage, leading with very large images, not cropping them in any way, or at least the ones we can't crop, we're not cropping them, showing them at full size. Something as mundane as a visit page has lots of images, hours of operation, and all that important information that users are looking for, still associated with images. The calendar, again, lots of images. Education programs. And then the collections. Now, something you may or may not know is that traditionally, designers don't have a good relationship with SharePoint. I relate it to vampires and the sun. It's just not happening. I mean, I remember trying to work with SharePoint years ago, and it was a very tough experience. And when the Art Museum came to us with this challenge and that it would be designed on SharePoint, we were skeptical. I have to be honest, we were very skeptical. But through a lot of conversation and therapy with Roberto's team and Building Eye, we realized that actually there's a lot we can do with SharePoint, and this isn't a visual death sentence like maybe a lot of designers think it would be. It was actually quite an exciting opportunity to work in SharePoint 2013. So one of the first things that came up was, can this be responsive? Can this be something that actually flexes per your device? And, you know, the answer was a resounding yes. Of course it can. Of course we can do that. That's actually something that we can manage quite well. So from the get-go, we knew this would be a responsive experience. We knew that users would be walking down the street. Maybe they're right off a cruise ship, or they're taking a tour bus, and they're trying to figure out what the next thing is that they're going to do. Well, we better offer up a great mobile experience for them so they can find that content. Of course, it needs to work on tablet. And we don't really feel like we're sacrificing any features based on the experience or the device you're on. So it was quite an accomplishment to know that there were no compromises here once we were looking at the various device dimensions. Another challenge that we needed to solve for was that the previous site was so challenging at featuring content, featuring imagery, was that another band-aid that the Seattle Art Museum created was a series of microsites to feature off new exhibitions. And what that meant was that every time a new exhibition came to town, they had to build a brand new microsite, a brand new mini site. At one point, they used to be in Flash, and then eventually that went away, but they're still writing new code. And there were several inconsistencies as you translated the brand from one exhibition to the next. So we needed to make sure to solve this problem and effectively kill those microsites. And so what you're seeing here are, again, Photoshop comps of what an exhibition page would look like. And again, this is looking at how we can display the content in a way that's respectful of the art, of the original artist's intent, as well as whoever ultimately owns the art, and having flexible content spaces so you can either zoom in on content, make certain highlights, on certain pieces, have quotes, have video content, have artist review, you can see the lorem ipsum there, featuring sponsor opportunities as well. So we needed to make sure that they solved all these problems without having to reinvent that wheel in terms of writing new code and really allowing Kevin's team and the administrative side of things to focus on developing content, not developing a whole new website. Because really, at the end of the day, we're treating, in this case, SharePoint as a content management system. And the operative word there is content. We want to make sure that content is why people are coming to this site, not a crazy new website or about the code or the back-end system, whatever it might be. It's not about that. These users are coming to the Seattle Art Museum website for that content. We want to make sure that that's what truly sings, and everything else should more or less melt away and be invisible to them so that they're focusing on that. So, no small task, right? Can you do it?
Sure.
All right. See what you can do.
I say that this is probably a quote from me when I first got the project. Right? If any of you have ever tried to do some even simple branding on SharePoint, you know that it can be challenging. You know, just doing simple theming or changing how SharePoint behaves, it's pretty challenging. And when you're talking about responsive, you're adding a whole extra layer of complexity. So how do we build this? Let me recap, first of all, what we had to deal with. What was it that were those requirements that we were being asked? First of all, and I think, Kevin, you can talk to this a little bit too, was that content management aspect. Up until this point, the Seattle Art Museum had to go to IT to request all changes to the website. And that, of course, burdened IT with this ton of requests for things that were content related and really shouldn't belong to them, especially when you're talking about curators that know everything about those pieces and they're the ones making the updates, where a simple thing as a typo can be a big deal. So it had to be very flexible in the content, and it had to allow them to really take every one of those exhibition pages and make it completely unique to that exhibition. But also, it had to look exactly like what Hornell Anderson designed. And I don't know if your case is, but I found usually stakeholders are super easy to please, right? And sure. And in this case, and never change their minds. Oh, that's a great one. Yes, that's true. Never change their mind. That doesn't happen. You know, in this case, we not only had one stakeholder, we had two teams of stakeholders in Hornell Anderson and Sam. But to make matters worse, I'll say worse, sorry. They were also two designer teams. So we really had no room for error. And I'll tell the story that we really coined the term that the project had to be pixel perfect. Because I can tell you that we built on one of our review sessions, we had the site pulled up and the projector, and we were in a big meeting room. And from across the meeting room, one of Kevin's designers just stares at the site and looks at it and looks at it again and says, you know, I think the magnifying glass on the search box is not perfectly vertically aligned. I looked at it and I said, it looks pretty good to me. Let me check. And I brought out my Internet Explorer developer toolbars and I actually measured it. Sure enough, it was 2 pixels off. So we were really, Hornell Anderson and Sam had both a vision for where every pixel had to go. So we needed to make that happen. And finally, when we thought about this as an external site, an external website, we knew that this was not going to be something like your corporate network where you can just support the latest version of IE and call it good. We needed to support any browser, any device, and make sure that the site looked stunning in each one of them. Because all of those scenarios, like what Nick was mentioning, were going to be potential revenue opportunities for Sam, and we didn't want them to miss on that. So it had to be cross-browser, cross-device, And he had to set up the site in a way that it could grow in the future. And it was solid enough that they could maintain it going forward. So I won't have you suffer death by PowerPoint. I'll jump right into doing some demos and actually show you what we built as I talk through it. So you already saw the comps. I'll switch over to my computer. You already saw the comps, so let's take a look at the live site as it stands today, which, by the way, launches in...
Kind of live.
2 weeks?
Yeah.
So you won't see this if you go to the live site. I'll just make that clarification.
You still get to enjoy the hideous site.
I'm sorry? Two weeks? March
20th.
20th is the current target date. They're working on content. All right, so this is the current website. And as you can see, if you looked at the website, you would not think, your first thought would not be, this is SharePoint. But it is all utilizing SharePoint's infrastructure to create that experience that Hornell Anderson presented. It is fully responsive, and it has a lot of feature detection on which device you're in to allow a true rich experience on all devices. And you're not going to take my word for it. I'll actually show it to you in a second. But the first requirement I talked about was responsive. So the site needed to be responsive. So let's see if it is. Maybe I'm lying. So the site, and obviously I'll do the cheesy first of all, I'll show you over here, how the site actually responds to the width of the screen in which it's being looked at, and will give you the correct experience for that. You know, removing information that is not as vital to you as you get into smaller screens, and always trying to utilize all your real estate as best it can. But part of that responsive part was making it show correctly in all of the devices. Now for this, and I'll actually switch over to, we have several devices to show you. We have this cool projector that can let you see everything I'm doing over here. So this is my Surface, right? And Surface has a pretty good resolution when I'm on landscape mode. And I'm used to seeing websites normally when I'm on it. But what happens when I actually switch this into a portrait view and look at the site? It will adjust and remove some of the information that is not as vital, like all the menu. It'll hide it on the drop-down. The search box will go away and will actually be put inside that menu bar. And you may have noticed that these white boxes below the what we call the hero exhibitions that we're highlighting were not there when I was showing you my desktop. And that's part of the feature detection that we're doing, that if you're looking at this website on any touch-enabled device, whether that's a tablet, a phone, or even a touchscreen monitor, then we'll actually remove all hover-over experiences. Because it could be that you're navigating this without a mouse, and we need to account for that. So it's very important when you're doing responsive design to think about what are the true use cases and think about what people are going to do with your site, and don't force experiences that are not going to be there. Now, in order to be able to do this in all devices, and I'll show you right now on my phone how that looks, we had to do a lot of testing, and it's one of those areas that I can't stress enough, that when you're doing responsive, there's a lot of testing involved. So one of the tools that we used, in case you've used it at some point, and if not, I'll make a plug for them and recommend them, it's called browserstack.com. And browserstack actually lets you spin up emulators of pretty much every IE version, every Chrome, Safari, Android device, iOS devices out there. The only one, unfortunately, they don't have at this point is Windows Phone, but we use the Windows Phone SDK for that. There's a pretty cool emulator on it. But with that browser stack, we were able to test on all of these devices and make sure that every page was going to look good on all of them, and it was going to adjust. And it was going to take into consideration what they were capable of. So, for example, this is one of the... we call them carousels that we have on the homepage that tries to show what's going on this week at the museum. And on that one, we wanted to enable that you could swipe if you were on a touch-enabled device and you didn't have to necessarily navigate through it like you would do on a desktop by clicking on the arrows. It also works dragging and dropping in the desktop. But not only it works not only it works on Windows devices, but also on other products. I'll bring out, and here Kevin makes fun of me because I totally cannot.
You're not good
I'll
with
admit
iOS
that
devices.
I can't operate Apple products.
They're too difficult.
Here. Sorry. I just cannot use them. No. There's something about them. But now that they've helped me unlock it, I think I know how to scroll. You know, this is Nick's iPad, and we look at this on his iPad, and it looks exactly like it looked on my Surface on portrait mode.
Zoom out a little bit. It's...
Yeah, I'm zooming out. Yeah. As I can. I'll show you this part so that you can see it. No, you can't see it. That it's actually an iPad. In case you don't believe me. But we'll get exactly the same experience. And we have some elements that adapt, and this part about figuring out what of those breakpoints for responsive are. That's one of the key areas of responsive design, is you got to let the content tell you which are going to be your breakpoints for your media queries. And figure out with that what should show in each one of those experiences. An example is this carousel. As I go back to my desktop, you'll see that I actually have three of these elements when I'm on a desktop. But on the portrait mode of the tablet, we'll actually just show two so that you can still swipe and see them seen two at the same time. But we don't try to put them all and make the user experience less enjoyable. Now let me go back to the desktop and actually show you more of the site and some more of the features that we've built into it. One of the key areas that I mentioned before was content management and how we were going to allow for that content to be flexible enough for them to put whatever they wanted on it, yet consistent enough across the site that they didn't have to go and build a new microsite every time they had a new exhibition. So right now, the hero exhibition that it's going on at the museum is the Moreau exhibit. So if we look at that Moreau page, we created, obviously, to create the responsive design, we had to create a custom master page and some CSS associated to it. But then what we did is we created a few page layouts that would allow them to make the content very different on each page, but still stack the content appropriately. So for example, on this page, if I were to show you this, and probably if we have time, I can show you how does this look when you're editing the website. You'll actually see that it is basically a set of columns and web part zones that are designed to stack as you get into smaller resolutions. And that allows them to insert all these web parts, which are very rich on images and have descriptions about those images, and they can add some more videos and quotes and all the different types of content that Nick was mentioning. So it was all about being that responsive without sacrificing the flexibility. And the way we achieved that, in this case, we actually, just with the page layouts and allowing them to have some, we call them pre-configured web parts, basically web parts that we save to the web part gallery that then Kevin and his team can just drag from the web part gallery and change the content out. So they didn't have to worry about how this was going to present. It was all already leveraging the classes that we had on our CSS. So it was going to respond appropriately. And also, something else we did, and it's something that I still see a lot of people not really leveraging, but it's very powerful, is when you think about SharePoint and content management, people automatically think that everything has to be on pages. And if we put everything on pages, you kind of lose some of, you end up in a similar position that Kevin and team were before we started redesigning the site, which was if the hours of operation were ever going to change in the museum, they had to find every place where the hours of operation were shown and change those. And if they forgot one place, then they had inconsistency. So what we did is we captured a lot of the information that was going to be repeated across multiple pages, and we put it on lists. And we organized it on lists so that some of Kevin's power users that don't know how to edit SharePoint, don't know how to do web parts, can just come in, update the hours of operations. They have an admissions theme that it's always there. It's always in the front desk of the museum charging for admissions. So they are now in charge of making sure that the hours of operation are reflected there and that they can be easily and dynamically changed. For example, the example we used throughout this process was Memorial Day. The museum is usually closed on Mondays, but Memorial Day, because it is a holiday, they do open. And they had no way to really show that other than like three layers deep and on a file. They had their holiday hours. So we really wanted to highlight that. So we just created a list where we have a list item for each one of the museums. And in those list items, we have all the information about the hours of operations, the address, et cetera. So that if any of those things were to change, we can change them in one place and it'll show all over the site. Now, how do you actually show that in the site? What you're seeing right here, it's a page that it's done with no custom web parts. This is just using a list on the back end, well, on the back of the site. and that is being pulled into this view by a ConvertSearch web part and a custom display template. Now, ConvertSearch web parts and display templates really let us do all of these transformation of the information and show it in a much, much richer way without having to write a custom web part, and now you have custom code that you can't upgrade as easily on your farm. So we definitely use that feature a lot in the development of the SAM site. And because it is just HTML and JavaScript, we were able to do things like that message that shows us when is the next time that the museum's open. That's just a JavaScript function that looks at the hours of operation and tells us if the museum is open now, and if not, when is the next time that it opens. So that really allowed for decentralizing the updates from IT and letting IT worry about running the servers, making sure everything was running smoothly, and not have to worry about updating content. So that now Kevin's team is actually going to be maintaining pretty much all of the content on the site and won't have to worry about that. Now, this search-driven architecture is really powerful, and Microsoft has done a great job on SharePoint 2013 with the ConvertSearch web parts. And I'll show you another area in which we leverage search. We all have legacy systems on our companies, right? I mean, there's no company that doesn't have it. We work with Microsoft themselves, and I should tell you about some of the legacy systems Microsoft has. But, you know, how do you integrate those into SharePoint? In this case, one of the requirements we had when we started was Kevin had this rich SQL database that maintained all of their events and was just a spider web. It connected to a ton of things in their organization. So they told us, that's off limits for you. You can't touch it. You can use it, but you can't replace it. The events have to live there. This was out of the scope of the project. So how did we leverage that? All of the information that you're seeing on a page like this, where I'm seeing all the information about exhibitions, and when I go into something like the calendar, which I can go here, all of that is being fed from that SQL database. Now, because this was an external facing site, we needed to make sure that that was done very quickly. So we didn't try to connect through it and do it live. What we did is we set up the BCS connection to the SQL database and had search crawl all the database. And then all of our web parts, all that they have to do is query the search index and get the information from it. you set up your external content types and set up your managed properties well, you can do all of this and not have to worry about the latency that you'll have of hitting that database every time. So that was perfect for the approach that we had because there was no need for the content to be real time. We could set it up to, you know, a continuous crawl that would make sure that every 15 minutes or so the content was being refreshed, and that was good enough for this case. So that is very powerful when you're trying to get around, for example, some of the limitations of you know, external lists and list view thresholds, and you need have those really big sets of data. And you can also use it to then massage the data and make sure that you're presenting in a much richer way, and it's just search results, or it's not just, you know, list items. You can really transform it when you're using the content search web framework. Now, for those of you that are IT pros in the room, it is, I'll just mention quickly from the architecture perspective, is obviously a farm that was set up outside the firewall on a DMZ with its own Active Directory and set up for high availability. So all we do is we bring the information. The only thing that we bring from inside the network is that information for the SQL database. Now, I showed you the visit page and how we leveraged out-of-the-box in content search web parts there. But there were areas where we just couldn't, the experience that we needed to replicate was too complicated to try to achieve with out-of-the-box experiences. And I think that's, you know, it's always fair to admit that SharePoint is a great platform, but there's only so much you can do out of the box. And one of its major advantages is that you can customize it. So in the case of, for example, this calendar that we're looking at, the experience needed to be fairly rich. We needed to be able to filter by any week and then have very quickly the ability to be able to remove certain museums from the list or certain types of events that I did not want to see. To create that, we actually had to create a custom web part that would provide this experience because it was very specific. Now, the difference on how we created it and how I recommend that when you have to approach this customizations, because there's no way around it, is that if you have to create an app, if you have to create a custom web part, you leverage still all of the out-of-the-box SharePoint functionality that it's there and just extend the part that you have to. So in this case, for example, we're not trying to query the SQL database directly or do anything like that. We're just doing the same thing that we use content search web parts for. We're querying the search index and manipulating that data on our end and filtering how, however the user has set up their filter. So that really lets us make sure that if we alter that BCS connection, it's the only thing we have to worry about, which is pretty important when you're talking about maintainability, making sure that that is easy to upgrade and update going forward. Now, the last thing that I'll show you is that user experience for how does this look. For example, one of the exhibition pages like Miro when I'm editing it. For that, I should log in. I apologize for not having this logged in already. One of the things you'll notice is that we did not, for example, brand the internal part of the site because no one was going to see this one. Yeah, because this is not the live site. So we don't have it on, we don't have it published yet. That's part of the stuff that is still being worked on. So if we look at that page and as an actual administrator or someone that can edit. I'm sorry, I was going to Miro. I just forgot where I was. So you'll see, first of all, we've really removed most of the SharePoint elements that users don't need when they're on pages. The only thing that's pretty much left is just my name and the settings menu. That's pretty much everything that you'll need when you're on the pages. We want to make it as easy as possible for power users to be able to manage their content. Now, when I look at one of these, you'll see that experience. And by the way, that warning that I got, in case you haven't played with it yet, is from the SharePoint-friendly URL. Another great SharePoint 2013 feature that if you're not leveraging, you totally should. Especially even on intranets, being able to set up friendly URLs that people can understand and know how to get from one to another, and the URL is readable, makes a big difference. So if we look at how this page looks when I'm editing it, it's pretty much a set of web parts that allow that experience that Nick was talking about, which is that modular design of everything just stacking on top of each other. And then we have, you know, all these web part zones have rules in the CSS about how they're going to stack. So we actually created, for example, two different page layouts for whether you want it as stacking from right to left or left to right. So users, power users, it's very easy for them when they're creating a new page to just come in and say, all right, this one, I'm going to put most of the important information on the right-hand side, so I want the right column to stack over the left. And you can just choose the right page layout for that and start putting your web parts in. And another great feature of SharePoint that we did utilize was that we set up, as Nick mentioned, there is a very particular restriction on the museum that we could not crop or alter the images at all. So what we did set up was some, we leveraged image renditions to set up the standard sizes for the web, for the images that were going to be used on the site. We have an image rendition that basically it's a full width image for the site. We have one that's half, which is one column, and then one that's half of a column, which is basically a fourth of the site. And we set up those standard renditions and taught the power users how to leverage those so that when they're using those, they don't have to worry about uploading the right size of the image. They can just upload the richest one they've got because they might use it in different places with different sizes. And that way, they don't have to worry about resizing. SharePoint takes care of it. And in case you haven't tried it yet, the image renditions, you can leave them with only one of the dimensions specified so that they will make the other one just adapt to whatever it is. So in this case, all of our image renditions are just set up with width. And the height is just adapted to whatever the aspect ratio of the image is. Now, I've shown you how we built it, but every project has its ups and downs, and there's always things that could be done better, and that went really well. So I'll turn to Kevin to tell us what were those things.
I don't know if I've said this to you guys quite as bluntly as I will now, but seeing this presentation again, I am so proud of you guys. It's just amazing. I love it. Every time I see it, it never gets old. And I just wanted to point out that how much the finished product looks like what Nick presented us. It really is awesome. Yeah. So thank you.
You skipped one slide.
I'm on room for improvement. So.
So you're not going to do well anymore.
No, no. Room for improvement. So one thing would be to keep it simple for your content provider. So on the old site, actually long before I got to SAM, what they had done is migrated all the content, and it was sitting in a SharePoint 2010 repository, and that was never touched. And so when we started working with BuildingEye, and Julie's like, we just need a Word document, it's that simple. So then we did it all again. But what was great is the gate of all the content owners, because each main tab, like visit, exhibitions, collections, join and give, those all have all different groups within the museum. That gave them the opportunity to edit down and change and update all that content before they put it in a Word doc for them to migrate it into the new site. Then we had these grandiose plans to train all of those content providers in SharePoint 2013, and then when BuildingEye was ready, we would have them review all that content again and make any other last minute changes, but we ran out of time. It was way too much. And we said, just look at it, give us your feedback again in a Word doc or an email, that's fine. And plus, they had basically just done that a few months prior, and so there weren't hardly any changes, but we had really grandiose ideas right there. So that was one way we could have improved things. And then also, we've had to push our timeline out several times, so I would just remind yourselves to always set a very realistic timeline on that. And things to remember, be flexible along the way. There were many times where, but I'm going to say at the same time, keep your eye on the prize. And so I really, really, really wanted the new site to look exactly like what Holman Anderson presented to us. And there were times along the way where I could have caved, or we could have settled for something slightly less, but we didn't. But I don't want to say that we were also just completely rigid along the way. You know, there were a lot of times that we did have to show flexibility. And again, I love the phrase, I think Roberto really invented it, was the pixel perfect phrase. And then another thing that I kind of forgot to mention at the beginning was consensus with your stakeholders is huge. And so all the way back to the beginning when we were working on the brand strategy, the new logo, and then on all the phases of the website design, is that I continually presented internally to all the directors of the museum, the COO of the museum, the executive committee of the board of the museum, and the board of the museum. I would go to their monthly meetings and give them updates on design and the progress of the website throughout that. So that way everybody felt like they were involved. They could make comments along the way, and then there are no surprises when everything goes live. And so also with all the content providers internally, it was really, I can't tell you how beneficial it was that they all felt involved. It's really, really important that you don't try to work in a vacuum, because I've done that before, and it doesn't work at all. Nick, you had a few things?
Yeah, just a couple things. The thing I've kind of already said, we've all more or less said, was focus on the user. And this isn't just the end user. Of course, we need to make sure we're giving them the content they need when they come and visit the website, but also thinking of that administrative user and trying to simplify their lives as much as possible. We're all strapped for time. We're all strapped for resources. And so part of this effort was really trying to simplify their process in terms of uploading new content, understanding where content belonged, and things like image renditions or new templates, just trying to minimize the amount of legwork they need to do on a daily basis and try to just make their job more about focusing on rich content, not on developing new pages. And to that end, the second most important thing right after users is that content is king. Content is what drove the design of the site. And content is also the reason why people come to the site in the first place. So we need to make sure that that's always top of mind, that that's always the thing we're focused on. It's also the thing that causes delays more often than not. So when we met early on, and frankly, this is what I tell each of my clients, where is the content coming from? Who's responsible for it? Who's writing it? Do we have final content now? If not, you better start, because it's going to take a long time. It always does. Content is always the thing that trips people up. And you guys actually did it really well, and we still had delays. And I think that's just the name of the game in terms of launching a new website. So focus on content. That's the second most important thing, just behind the user. And then finally, my own personal change of heart about SharePoint. As it turns out, SharePoint is pretty awesome, and I'm excited.
I have to put myself in that bucket too.
Yeah.
When I first got to the art museum, I was hired just to really get this project going, and they told me it was going to be built in SharePoint, and I had my initial reaction was, oh my God. But I'm a convert too.
Yeah. Well, even this morning I tweeted about this talk, and a couple of my former colleagues said, what, SharePoint for a website, huh? So I'm excited to be part of a team that is really redefining what you can do with it, and that there's actually a lot of beautiful things you can do with SharePoint. And I just want to echo again your point earlier about that team aspect of it, in that it's super important that you find the experts to help, the experts to do what they do best. And so we knew at Hornell Anderson we could help define a great user experience, but we knew we needed to find Roberto and his team at BuildingEye to really help bring this thing to life, because otherwise it would have just been a great idea and beautiful Photoshop comps and nothing more. So having that right team is super important.
Yeah, definitely. I think it made a great team in letting us all focus on what we're good at. And from my side, a few of the things to remember is that a lot of times I get that question when we talk about SharePoint and being something that can be responsive. I always get asked, can SharePoint even be responsive? And yes, the answer is yes. There's a little bit of work involved in it. I won't lie. It's not, a one-hour task that you're embarking on. But there's a lot of ROI on making SharePoint responsive. Whether you're looking at an external website where you're looking at revenue, or you're trying to make your intranet or extranet accessible to people who are on the move on their tablet and on their phones, there is always a use case for mobile. And SharePoint can be responsive, and it has good features in it, like device channels. And we didn't use device channels, and that's probably a whole separate hour to talk about why. But we just can create a custom master page, custom CSS, use Twitter Bootstrap. And there's tons of information out there. And there's tons of things to get you started. There's actually a CodePlex solution that Eric Overfield publishes that gets you started on responsive SharePoint that you can start from there and leverage it. And just keep trying to give back to the community on if you fix anything on those areas of responsive. There's tons of CodePlex out there that people are putting out on how to make SharePoint responsive. The other thing that I wanted to leave you with is the power of search. We all know that SharePoint search is one of the best parts of SharePoint, but it gets overlooked a lot of times for content. And with the addition of content search web parts and display templates, there is really a lot of things you can get done without creating a custom web part, without creating an app. There is a lot of no-code solutions just by using HTML and CSS on your display templates. So think about those, especially even on your intranet. I think a big theme of today is about the user experience. And when you think about what Nick talked about in the brand architecture and leveraging, trying to bring all of those disparate locations under one umbrella, that's kind of what we do when we create an intranet, right, or an extranet on SharePoint. It's trying to bring all of those departments, all of those disparate teams under one umbrella. And so it's really important to focus on the user and focus on that user experience. And search can definitely help you get there and integrate into other systems. And last, which might sound a little pessimistic, but it's just a reality check, is that you're never done. So in case you haven't figured out, launching anything, a website, an intranet, extranet, it's only the beginning. And that's something that, like with Kevin, we've discussed at length, and I think Kevin realizes that, and they realize that this is just the beginning. There's already, you have a laundry list, right, already?
Phase two is huge.
Phase two, there's always going to be a next version, next release, we're going to do this. But part of that not being ever done, I think it's an important mindset for us to get into, because sometimes we feel like, I'll do all this work and then launch, and that's it, I'm done. And that's what causes sites like what you had before, to quote you, hideous, I didn't say it. That's what causes that. It's just the content gets stale, the technology gets stale. If you're always innovating, if you're always doing those incremental updates, then it's much easier because you can do them in bite-sized chunks versus having to redo a whole site every time. And with that, I'll ask Kevin to tell us what's next.
Right. So Roberto just mentioned the phase two. So yes, we have a whole list for phase two that we want to do. One of the things that I want to do is, Nick has reminded us that content is king, as we want to create more content for the site beyond just imagery that comes with an exhibition or the artist's work. Particularly video, we want to shoot great video. Nick's team has already created a great video for us, so just enhancing all the content that's on that site is one thing we want to do for sure. Constant improvement. And then internally, there's also, we have to redesign our email campaigns so they match the aesthetic of the website so that you're clicking on that and staying in the same look and feel. And then there are lots of things that we can do in the galleries digitally as well. On your experience at the sculpture park, there's lots of things that we can leverage all of this look and feel and the aesthetic on that as well. And then also, I have to say, Julie, after the keynote speech on last night or yesterday, is Office 365 is hugely something we're considering, and I'm really stoked about it now. And that got me really jazzed on that. So that's definitely, I hope, in our future as well for what's next. So with that, I think we're ready for questions if anybody has one. There's a microphone in the hallway if you're comfortable with it, or the aisleway, or you can
speak loudly. And just before we start the Q&A, I'll just remind everyone that please go out into MySPC and fill out the session evaluations. That will let us know what do you think about the session, what did you like, what you didn't, and we love to hear that feedback. And you can contact us through Twitter, SPYAM. We're also on the Yammer network, so if you don't get to ask your question or you don't want to come up and ask it, you can go to the Yammer network for the conference and ask the question there. Just look for SPC 205 as a topic, and you can ask it there too.
Okay, well, I hope you indulge me. I have three questions. First one's for Roberta, and while you're setting up the answer, maybe I can ask the other two. So, could you show us an example of a web page that is search-driven and not built for web parts?
Yes.
That would be great. And we heard from the client and we heard from the designer that they weren't SharePoint people. So what drove the SharePoint decision for you guys?
Being in Seattle, Microsoft is clearly, and not surprisingly, a huge partner of the museum. And they support us very much and do a lot for the museum. So it was a very collaborative thing with them that we worked on that.
Okay, and the last question is also for you, Kevin. I feel like dating game all of a sudden. Okay. But it is, how would you characterize the different roles of content providers within your organization, the internal users?
So
you have some people who are curating content on the website, other people who are updating things like the hours that you're open. I mean, are there...
So that is the other thing that for what's next for SAM is that we do want to provide, I guess it's called the rights, to certain people to go in and publish directly to the live site rather than have to go through marketing. So all the people that will, the content providers that are trained in SharePoint will be able to make updates on their own. So the admissions team can go in either if it's in a database or if it's something within SharePoint, we will give, you know, authorship rights to certain people within the organization. Yeah. And then, but marketing will always own the homepage. Marketing will always own the exhibition page, and we will always own the main landing page of every main tab. But then from there on down, we'll start to give other people the right to publish.
But I think there'll be about three different tiers in terms of permissions. There'll be the ones that can only do the search-driven content, like lists and stuff that's on the databases. Then there's the teams that can actually edit pages, but they'll have to go through marketing when they try to publish for that approval workflow. And then Kevin's team will be almighty and will be able to do everything.
Did you include a change control workflow with the deployment?
For what it's changing?
Making changes on the website?
In this case, we didn't, because everything pretty much has to be approved by marketing. So they'll kind of own that that approval workflow to make sure that everything they see it first.
Oh, and I have a suggestion for phase two, because I live in Seattle. My wife is an art teacher in Seattle, so focus on the educational resources on the site.
Yeah.
Put what?
Focus on the educational resources or resources for educators on the site. That would be great.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that one it's been brought up a couple of times, I think, on the programs that the museum has. I will.
And I can't say how impressed I am by Sam and their outreach to educators. It's really amazing. My wife is so charged up and so excited every time she goes down there.
Hopefully she'll have a better experience now under the Programs and Learning tab. It's a much more curated level of content in there for educators.
All right. I'm done hugging it.
Yeah, and this is the page you were asking for, that visit page. It's just one search, content search web port with a custom display template.
So what does it look like when you go to edit it?
It's very exciting. One content search web port. Here you go. So it's just pulling from the list, and we have our custom display template that formats it. Yeah? You want to see my code? It is. It is HTML and JavaScript. You actually want to see the display template, right?
Yeah. So how are you displaying
that? Okay. Everyone that's not a developer, please cover your eyes. You won't like this. We'll actually show code. See, this is the part that I could go on for hours, so it's dangerous. So let's hear the question while I pull this out.
It's related.
Okay.
Sort of.
Yeah.
So obviously running a public website has its challenges with traffic, right? And I'm sure you have those challenges. This is an on-prem solution. I believe this is enterprise as well. Mm-hmm. What are your thoughts about, you mentioned Office 365, why you went the route with on-premise enterprise? You probably already had it in-house. Compared to Office 365 solution, can you talk about that a little?
I think that you might be able to answer it as well as I can, actually. But one thing about the museum is that I think I missed a slide earlier, is what you were trying to point out to me, but one of the points I was going to make was about, you know, don't try not to be a hero. There's no way I could have done this, or we could have done this without, you know, hiring these guys or working with the experts. And I have 3 designers and 1 copywriter in my entire team, and we have a small IT team as well. And so I think you were right, we've always been doing it on-prem, and so the least amount of major change, the better for us at that time.
Yeah, and so they had SharePoint internally, and the idea of using it as a content management to not have to learn something else was important. But when we started the project, pretty much, 365 was not yet upgraded to 2013. And when we looked at the feature set, like concert web parts and those things, mm-hmm. it didn't make sense to try to recreate that on 365 on 2010, so that later we could rip it out for out-of-the-box experience. So at the moment, they decided to better go with 2013 on-prem and then look at the cloud as another roadmap item. Now, we did have to do some calculations on whether it was going to be able to support the load, because it does receive about 180,000 visits a month at least. So what we did is we basically looked at the analytics, and it's a point that I'll recommend for anyone, internet or external site, to really have good analytics. It's one of the parts that I hope no one from Microsoft hears me, but SharePoint doesn't do great on analytics.
Online especially.
So, for online, especially for external sites. But there's other companies, I won't name names, that have pretty good analytics that can tell you a lot about the visits, the behavior flow, etc. So definitely look at those, have good analytics. And what we did is we looked at the analytics and saw what were the number of concurrent users coming to the site. And based on that, we calculated the requests out to the web front ends and the SQL server. And that's how we ended up that probably with 2 web front ends, we pretty much could load balance it. We might have to add a 3rd one if the site traffic starts to increase.
Is the museum a not-for-profit?
Yes.
Yeah, so you have some benefits there with Office 365.
Yeah, pricing. Definitely.
Thank you.
And for those that asked, this is the display template for that. So There you go. So we're basically, that's where we have our functions to determine if it's open or not in JavaScript. And then basically this is the real display template where we have the HTML that shows the information that it's returned by the concert webpage. So again, following that concept of separating presentation from the content, we can just, you know, with the content being the same, we can come in here and customize how it looks, and we don't have to change anything on the list.
You didn't give us a chance to critique the typography on your code, though.
Yeah.
We'll let this go.
Yeah. I think there's another question.
There's another question? Yeah. I know. This is not for everyone. You can ask me more questions on that if you have. Later. Okay? What?
Thank you.
Thank you so much.
We're excited.
We can't wait either.
Yes. And sorry if it looks like I'm disconnecting everything. I have a back-to-back session, so I'm just sending the computer for demo. Anyone has any other questions?
No?
If not, I'll make a shameless plug and tell you to go to my next session. We're going to be talking large-scale records management. That's quite a change from this. But
thank you so much.
Enjoy that.
Everyone, for coming.
Thank you. And feel free, if you think about something as you're, you know, drinking some, you think about a question, feel free to hit us on the Yammer network.